Information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. Yeah, I'm so glad.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Division Midway Alliance Festival of Nations on Sunday, September 17th at the parking lot of Duke's Country Bar and Grill here in Portland. The Division Midway Alliance Festival of Nations is an exciting festival showcasing the best of East Portland's multicultural community and businesses together in one place. Festival activities include live entertainment, food, and specialty items only available at the festival. Again, that's the Division Midway Alliance Festival of Nations on Sunday, September 17th, 11 a.m. at the parking lot of Duke's Country Bar and Grill. The address is 14601 Southeast Division. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Good evening and welcome to Prison Pipeline. I am one of the co-hosts of Prison Pipeline, Emma, and I'm really excited to be joined here tonight with Buckley and with Maria from Critical Resistance. And we're going to have a really good conversation tonight about prison abolition, about mental health care, not policing, and all of the great work that Critical Resistance is doing to abolish the prison industrial complex. So welcome, Buckley and Maria.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks.
Great. And if you could just speak up just a little bit. So tell me a little bit about Critical Resistance and what are y'all doing?
Yeah, well, I appreciate that you said prison industrial complex abolitionists, because that's really at the heart of our work. And I think when we say prison industrial complex, that's kind of this nebulous term. And I think when I concentrate on that word complex, that to me really sums it up, of all of these interlapping forces that serve to oppress our communities. And a definition that I really appreciate about the prison industrial complex reads, through its reach and impact, the PIC helps and maintains the authority of people who get their power through racial, economic, and similar privileges. And so there's many ways that this power is collected and maintained through the prison industrial complex. And this could include creating mass media images of people as criminals, the ways that policies are enforced differently in different communities and impact them disparately. And these communities are people of color, poor people, queer people, immigrants, youth, that are consistently showed as delinquent and deviant. And it's also maintained by the system of capitalism which we live in, where huge profits are gained by private companies that deal with prisons and police forces. And so helping them earn political gains for tough-on-crime politicians and increasing the influence of prison guard and police unions. So that complex piece comes up again and again. It's all of these different systems that are in play to really oppress community. And so critical resistance comes from that politics of really dismantling that industrial complex.
Totally.
How did critical resistance start? Like, what's its history or herstory?
That's a good question. So critical resistance was founded about a little over 20 years ago by a group of concerted, like, activists and scholars and people who had been through incarceration themselves, people who like had spent their lives being targeted by the police. Notable founding member is Angela Davis. That's kind of what everybody knows about. But yeah, so Critical Resistance is a national organization that has multiple chapters all around the country. So we have a chapter in Portland, and the chapter in Portland is the most recently formed chapter, formed in 2013. But Critical Resistance was founded as a way to respond to the desperate need to create not reform-oriented, but like changing what we have and creating something new, solutions to incarceration, to policing, to putting people in cages when what they need is care and resources and help. So, like I said, Critical Resistance Portland has been around for not quite 5 years, but getting there. And our chapter here focuses on a couple of different things. We have a correspondence program, a prisoner correspondence program that we run that meets monthly, where we not just correspond with, like, in a pen pal way, but we write to and we talk with folks who are incarcerated in prisons, jails, penitentiaries, detention centers in the states of Oregon and Washington. We write with them, but we also do political education about the history, the breadth, the impact of the prison industrial complex, and also education around abolition and abolitionist politics, abolitionist futures. And we send resources and have like dialogue with folks on the inside. So that's one of the things that our chapter has done since its inception. And what we've kicked off recently, but which has been in process for several years now, is a campaign that we are calling, for now, Mental Health Care, Not Policing. And that campaign was born of a series of community meetings that happened a couple years ago, where Critical Resistance, which I'll call CR for short, probably in general, CR was trying to find out from the community, from communities in Portland, which issues around policing and the prison industrial complex, but policing, which aspect of policing in Portland most critically needed to be changed? What is the most impactful, ineffective, harmful aspect of policing in Portland? And from those community meetings and community conversations, the takeaway was the police as first responders to mental health crises is often, first of all, often deadly, as we know. The Portland Police Bureau has been under DOJ investigation for this use of force, and specifically mental health crisis situations, for several years now. So that high end problem that of the result being murder when police respond to mental health crisis calls, but also the fact that police can never be proper de-escalators. Police can never respond appropriately, no matter how much training they get. I'll be very clear about that. It does not matter how much training they receive. De-escalation to mental health crises fundamentally is at odds with other training that police officers receive throughout their careers.
I know. I can think of at least 10 police homicides that have happened in the last 7 years. That no, more than 10. I can think of 11 now. I know there's more than that. Just in Portland.
Yeah, just in
the whole country. Mm-hmm. Just in Portland, where the police have murdered someone who was homeless, who was mentally ill, who, like, you know, maybe had marginal issues. Maybe they had substance abuse issues. They were unarmed, or at least they didn't have a weapon that could deliver deadly force to mm-hmm. the police. And they were murdered by the police. Mm-hmm. That was what happened when there was calls, including from the victims' families.
Right. And that's often who makes the calls. It's a lot of the time people are forced to, there's no other options than to call the police a lot of the time. For people are forced into this position where they are extremely concerned that someone they care about, someone they love, is going to hurt themselves, is going to hurt someone else. And what that person often needs in that time is not the traumatization or re-traumatization of a police interaction, but they need, like, real mental health care. They need mm-hmm. people who are trained in de-escalation, people who are not going to show up with the mentality of threat neutralization.
Yeah, and not just in Portland either, but also, like, I live in Clackamas County. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I live in Clackamas County. In Clackamas County, there's been 2 police murders in the last 2 years that didn't get a lot of attention. Mm-hmm. And they were really, like, one of them was a murder of someone who had schizophrenia. And police were called to his house. And the reason I know this situation so well is because it was less than a mile from where I live. Mm. And this person was queer. And he hung a rainbow flag in his window. And the police were called to his house because of something about him making a disturbance. Mm. And they said that he was, like, he was threatening them in some kind of way. And they killed him. And there was another case in Milwaukee. It was the murder of a 16-year-old African-American male. Are you familiar with this case where the mother called because he was suicidal and the police came and they killed him?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was like Christopher Kalonji.
Yes. Which is mm-hmm. just, and, you know, in Clackamas County, these things are just kind of like, you know, just covered over. People mm-hmm. pretend like it doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it happens all the time.
It does.
Yeah, and I think that oftentimes in Portland, we're pointed to Project Respond as, look, the police is doing this thing to try to support. Project Respond is folks that are in the mental health profession that are called as an alternative 911 to support folks that are having mental health crises. But
they do ride alongs with cops.
Yeah, what we found that 99% of the time, the cops are still showing up with them. So if you're going to be still showing up with someone with a gun in uniform, that's no response that's going to end in any other situation than the way we've seen things end for a lot of folks here in Portland before.
Yeah. I mean, one of the longest going vigils in Portland is the vigil that happens on the 12th of every month mm-hmm.
For Keaton Otis.
Keaton Otis, and that was a similar situation. So tell us about your campaign.
Yeah, and so the campaign, we've been meeting for about 7 months now, 6 or 7 months now.
Since February.
Yeah.
February was our first meeting.
And it's kind of a two-part strategy of, one, defunding police as this mental health response for people experiencing a mental health crisis, and kind of the other piece is building up user-led, community-derived mental health resources. And I think that, you know, we were talking about that this language also gets co-opted a lot. And I think about policing, you know, now they use community policing, the police do and the state does, to make it sound more palatable to community members. And we know that that's not actually what that is. And I feel like the same thing happens around mental health. So I think it's important for us to say, when we say mental health resources, we're not talking necessarily about state mental health support and those things that are still really putting people behind a different kind of bar, putting people in a different kind of cage. And so we're really talking about alternatives that are community-based and radically different than and some of the places and ways people are siphoned and isolated away from our society, who are deemed like mentally unfit to be in the world. So mm-hmm. I think that that's something that we've seen, kind of this idea of the treatment industrial complex. We've seen it become more and more important as we meet as a coalition of individuals right now. Maybe it'd be helpful to talk about how we've kind of grown over the past totally. 6 months.
Totally. I just wanted to touch a little bit to just backtrack really quick on what you said, just the language of community, and to kind of highlight how one of the things that we're seeing in Portland is that the language of community policing has been built completely into was built completely into the mayoral campaign of Ted Wheeler. Mm-hmm. It has been built completely into the Portland Police Bureau budget, allocating funding for community policing. But just to highlight something, it's really hard to find a good definition of what community policing is. And the Budget Review Office also noted that when they were looking at the police budget, the Police Bureau budget for this fiscal year that we're in now, one of their criticisms was, we see all this funding going towards so-called community policing, community service officer program, et cetera, mm-hmm. but we can find no robust and meaningful definition of what that actually looks like, who the community is, who decides that, and so on. So it really is rhetorical kind of gymnastics there. So when we're talking about, like Buckley said, when we're talking about community determined and derived and directed alternative resources, we aren't operating under the same definition of community as the city government and so on seems to be. So
what is the idea of community that Critical Resistance people who are working on this process work with?
Totally. Do you want to talk about that? Or?
Yeah. I mean, I think community is any person who has needs for mental health supports. And so as the coalition grows, we are trying to center that experience and the wide variety that that takes. And I think that is hard when we, you know, community is this thing that changes and shifts depending on where you are. But I think that it's relying and building community capacity in whatever form that takes in your neighborhood or in your organization. I think about, you know, groups that are working on actually finding out what the needs are of the folks in the community around mental health. And so I think that ties really well to our coalition. Right now, we're very much a coalition of individuals, and some folks are connected to other organizations, but the hope is really to grow and bring in organizations that are user-led, peer-run. There are so many of those organizations in this area, and I think we're continually not only trying to bring them into the coalition, because a lot of organizations don't have capacity to attend a meeting once a month for 3 hours, but at least like center their analysis and their lived experience and what they see as needs in the community. So, yeah.
You know, when I think about community, for instance, one of the groups that I think is often targeted and victimized by the police is the houseless mm-hmm. community. And it is a kind of community. I mean, people, you know, become peers in so many ways mm-hmm. in their struggle for survival. And so how can how can this group like be inclusive of members of that community in a way that's meaningful and effective?
Mm. That kind of outreach is something that we've been working to try to figure out. So we've been trying to figure out how to, for a while we were talking about how to get people in the room who needed to be in the room, people who are the most impacted by policing and being targeted by police being in when in mental health crisis or perceived crisis. We were thinking about it that way, and now we're thinking more in terms of we need to be going to the tables of other people, right? We need to be going to out into the community and finding out what other people need first before we can ask them to join us. Mm-hmm. We need to be figuring out what we can do for them and go in that direction. And so outreach to organizations that work with houseless folks is one thing we've been working on doing. I think that we're also at a point too where we really want to connect with folks and get their stories. And if anyone listens to this and wants to share a story or get involved in conversation with us about experiences that they've had, their like lived reality of involving like mental health and interactions with the police and with the state, we would really, really like to hear from you.
How would they get in touch with you?
So that's a great question. So we can definitely be reached by email. I know some that's can be a varying access, but our email is crpdx@criticalresistance.org. We also have a Facebook page. We can be messaged. We also have a prisoner correspondence mail night coming up on the 20th of September from 5 to 8 p.m. at, in other words, Feminist Community Center on is 14 Northeast Killingsworth. And that's free. No experience necessary. There's food. And
so those
we'll
are
be there,
ways people
and you can talk to us.
Those are ways people can plug in. It sounds like your work is, I mean, incredibly effective, and it sounds very meaningful because I think a lot of service providers to like houseless people, to people who are maybe facing challenges to their immigration status, mm-hmm. to women. All different kinds of interest groups in Portland. None of the agencies that like really work with them like come from the radical perspective of prison abolition.
Mm.
And I think that like coming from that perspective as a starting point, like I think that if you're able to sustain this campaign, will provide like a really meaningful like in like a unique perspective like for those service providers. A lot of those service providers, my sense is like Central City Concern, different mm-hmm. organizations, are kind of like sucked up into like, you know, this. I mean, it's not that they don't do good work; they do, but they may not necessarily have prison abolition as like their first and foremost goal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think starting from that perspective is like a really radical and meaningful place to begin a conversation with those organizations.
That makes me think of something that critical resistance kind of holds as a politic and as a strategy, which is that while we are a prison industrial complex abolitionist organization, and that makes us somewhat like diametrically opposed to reform work. However, we do believe that there are types of reform that we kind of call abolitionist reforms that are reforms that can be in service long term of the goals and the like reaching the material realities of abolition, and that's mm-hmm. kind of connects to why are we working on policy. Some people are like, oh, that sounds like reform, like why are you targeting the city council's lens on the police budget, like why are you going to the city government in that way, that sounds like reform work. Well, sure, but if we can get funding reallocated from the police budget into like safe and like equitable and affordable housing, into like education resources, you know, into there's the things that you're mentioning that actually keep people like that not having access to housing is an extremely big like is yeah. an extremely high correlation to people who struggle with mental health, right? Like, so that's why we would go that route with trying to affect like the policy and the kind of legal aspect of some of this stuff, because in the long term, that's going to serve to take funding away from the police, to to kind of extract the role of police in our communities. That's like that abolitionist reform idea, just to kind of like parse that out, because that's kind of something that people ask us about a lot.
Yeah, and on the flip side of that, I think it's been hard sometimes to for organizations that want to be involved and also feel that abolition is a radical concept, too radical for them. And I think we've gotten some pushback, too, of folks being like, I can't go back to my organization and ask them to sign on to, like, an abolitionist campaign. So I feel like it's been also navigating that, too, and where do we find a place that doesn't compromise the politics but also actually does work that is important and changing today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just wanted, we've got about 3 minutes left, so I just wanted to kind of give you all that cue that we're kind of getting near a wrap-up stage. So if there's really important points that you haven't gotten to yet or things that you still really need to say, now's a good time to do that. So have we covered a lot of the things that you've wanted to cover so far in our interview?
Yeah, I think that we've gotten to a lot of the pieces.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. I was going to ask you a question, but it sounds like you've got one.
For me, this process has really been taking that prison industrial complex lens and then also tying that into the treatment industrial complex. And I think that that's been really interesting to start to understand. And we have some folks in our coalition who have a much like more robust understanding than I do, but kind of what they were talking about is how all of this kind of privatized prison money and all of this profit-seeking private organizations in the state, too, have now seen kind of this mass turn away from as much imprisonment as before, but as we know that's still like disproportionately high, but now it's more palatable for them to put these policies into these quote-unquote mental health resources and all of these things that are still imprisoning people. And I think for me that's been really an eye-opener, because I feel like I've been like duped by imagining that or not duped, but I've just been lured into thinking that these resources are actually helping people when in the end they're imprisoning people. So for me, I feel like that's been one of the kind of aha moments of moving into this work and this
campaign.
Right,
yeah, sending people to Salem isn't really any better.
No.
Yeah, there's that Disability Rights Oregon report on the State Penitentiary Behavioral Health Unit, mm-hmm. and just reading that was also incredibly eye-opening in how they use like Suicide Watch or these supposed like mental health interventions to punish the people there. That is just, it's the same thing, just named differently.
Well, we're just about out of time. Was there anything like in the last minute or so you wanted to get in?
I would just say if you we've been building this coalition of folks who, access mental health services, who are service providers themselves, who work with organizations in Portland, grassroots groups, people who are the most impacted by policing. We've been trying to build out this coalition comprised of these folks. And I would say if you see yourself in this work, if you see yourself like having a stake and a place in this work, then we want to hear from you. And if you want to be involved, like please get in touch with us. Send us an email, crpdx@criticalresistance.org. Message us on Facebook. Come to our letter writing night. Talk to us in person. Next Wednesday, September 20th, at Another Words, from 5 to 8, or 2 Wednesdays. We want that involvement from the community. When we say community, we want that to be expansive.
Yeah, that will actually be next Wednesday, September 20th.
Okay. So. Great.
Oh, I have no idea what week it is, clearly.
It's hard to know.
Well, thank you so much for being on Prison Pipeline tonight. I've been joined with Buckley and with Maria. So thank you so much for joining us, and good luck with your meeting, and please keep us up to date on what's on what you're doing.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of KBOO at the Clinton, Thursday, September 21st at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. This month, KBOO at the Clinton will be featuring the documentary, I Am the Blues. I Am the Blues highlights the last original blues devils, many in their 80s, still living in the Deep South. Featured musicians include Barbara Lynn, Henry Gray, and Jimmy Duck Holmes. Again, that's KBOO at the Clinton featuring I Am the Blues, Thursday, September 21st at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Yeah, I'm so glad.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it is Hard Knock Radio, so stay tuned.
Yo, this is M1 from Dead Prez.
Hey, what's up? This is Boots from the Coop.
Nah, I mean, telling you to stay tuned to Hard Knock Radio.
Keep it locked.
On the move, this is Pam Africa on Hard Knock Radio, the station of resistance. Down with this rotten-ass system.
Yo, check this out. Hard Knock Radio coming at you, bringing the noise. This is Chuck D, Public Enemy number one, news, views, and hip-hop.
I'm Eddie Zane.
And I'm Helen Zia.
And we're on Hard Knock Radio.
What's up, folks? This is your girl Femi representing the whole Bay Area. I'm here on Hard Knock Radio, news, views, and hip-hop. Stay tuned.
Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. A lot of attention has been directed to Hurricane Irma, and last week,